But right now, let's bring to these microphones a man who looks at the geopolitical activities for us. We're talking about Ken Timmerman in the Washington, D.C. area. Ken, there is so much to talk about. Quickly, let me get into it. Iran's terror network is prolific. Now, that's the word of the United States report. I think it was issued by the State Department. This means that Iran is involved in terror, and that smiley face mullah that you refer to as the President Rouhani is not really what he's trying to portray to the world, is he?
Well, that's right, Jimmy. And every year the State Department puts out its annual report on international terrorism. And they have focused really from the get-go in the 1980s when they began these on Iran and what the Islamic Republic has been doing around the world. What I find interesting is that there is an increasing focus coming primarily from the FBI, but from other intelligence agencies in the United States, on the Iranian regime's networks in the United States and in countries close to the United States. You know, in recent years, Customs and Border Patrol in this country have caught people trying to cross the border from Mexico into the United States illegally. They call them OTMs, other than Mexicans. And many of these individuals have been photographed in prisons there, once they're captured, with tattoos in Farsi on their bodies. They have been Hezbollah members, caught and then released and sent back to Mexico because they had no positive identification. So we know that the Iranians are trying to infiltrate thugs and terrorists across our southern border with Mexico, an unguarded border for the most part. And we know that they have active cells throughout the United States. This report is a belated acknowledgement of the extent of Iran's terrorist penetration of the United States, in addition to its ongoing activities, obviously, around the world, their support for Hamas, their support for the Taliban. People tend to forget that the Iranian regime, a Shiite Islamic fundamentalist regime, has no qualms supporting what some analysts believe are competing Sunni terrorist organizations. In fact, the Sunnis and the Shias get along just fine when it comes to murdering Jews and killing Americans.
Well, indeed, everybody's trying to portray Rouhani as some type of a moderate, but indeed, he's the head of this regime that has this prolific network of terrorists around the world in support, in training, and in provision of arms and monies to be able to do what they're doing. Let's don't get out of the Middle East very far. We think about Iraq. Iraq has gone to the polls. They're in their third election since there has been a pullout by the United States. And indeed, Maliki, the prime minister of Iraq, is endeavoring to try to go to his third term. The vote count is underway. It may be a while before they come to the final answer on who has won this election. But this is a key point in their restoration program, is it not, Ken?
Well, it is. The Iraqis have troubled elections, but in many ways they are more secure than our elections here in the United States. I mean, they actually require voter ID so you can come to the polls. And once you've voted, they dip your finger in this indelible ink that lasts for a couple of days. The photograph that is being circulated by the news agency shows Prime Minister al-Maliki coming out of the polls with his finger dipped in this purple ink, and proud of it, as so many Iraqis have been. Look, this never would have happened during the days of Saddam Hussein. And all of those people who say, well, we never should have gone into Iraq, what a disaster of the Bush administration, we should have allowed Saddam to go there, things would have been better if Saddam had still been in power, they don't look at things like this. A real election, as troubling as it may be, as troubled as it may be, with all the intimidation from Maliki's parties of being what it is. Nevertheless, the Iraqi people went to the polls, and they did actually vote, and the vote was a secret ballot, and that's why it's going to take, you know, several weeks for them to come up with the results, because they actually have to count the vote. What an innovation.
What an innovation. That is absolutely correct. And it's great to be able to see some progress in the rebuilding of a nation, a war-torn nation, that needs to have a solid and very stable government leading them as they move towards the future there in Iraq. Ken, I have to talk to you about a book that you're writing, and we're not going to get into that necessarily unless you got some special announcement. But you're going to bring in the information that you believe should be made known about Benghazi, what happened there. It kind of faded away from the news media. It seems like it's coming back. Talk to me about the situation and what is going on and what the United States Congress has done, even, I think, just today.
There's been extraordinary news this week. Benghazi has come roaring back onto the front pages thanks to a lawsuit by a private non-government watchdog group called Judicial Watch, which has been suing the government to get documents about Benghazi. Now, you know, multiple congressional committees in both the House and the Senate have requested documents from the administration from the get-go. Ever since the September 11th attacks in 2012 that killed four Americans there in Benghazi, Libya. And the administration claims that they've been forthcoming and provided thousands of documents. Well, it turns out that they've been very selective in the documents that they provided, and Judicial Watch was able to acquire, through the Freedom of Information Act, suing the government in court because they would not provide this willingly, a series of emails out of the White House that shows without any doubt whatsoever that the White House has lied, that White House officials have lied about their involvement in the Benghazi cover-up after the Benghazi attacks. In particular, there's a September 14, 2012 email from Ben Rhodes, who was a strategic communications advisor to the president. It's a memo where he is coaching Susan Rice, ambassador at the time, who is going to go on the Sunday talk shows and tell Americans that the Benghazi attacks were really not attacks, they were not terrorist attacks, they were protests over an internet movie that, of course, nobody had seen, a protest that had gone bad. And so you read in this email how the White House is coaching Susan Rice and putting out a story which, for the past 20 months, they claimed had come from the CIA. They claimed that this notion that the attacks in Benghazi were a protest gone wrong over an internet movie. They claim that they came from the CIA, and now we see, without any doubt, that it's the White House that's coaching Susan Rice on it. Rice. Now, why is that important? It's important, as I reveal in my book, Dark Forces, that's going to come out in June. It's important because it shows, number one, somebody at the political level, either Secretary of State Hillary Clinton or the President, Barack Obama, invented this story whole cloth to cover up their mistakes in Benghazi, to cover up their secret activities in Benghazi, including, quite likely, gun running to the Syrian rebels.
Wow. Wow. Hey, listen, we're going to stay on top of this story, folks, because of the fact that Ken Timmerman's on top of it. And, of course, he's writing a book coming out in June, as he said. And we'll talk more about that as that time gets closer as well. Ken, talk to me about this. A combat alert in the Ukraine, as the Ukraine is in full military mode. Now, the possibility with a Russian invasion. Is that really that much of a possibility?
Well, Jimmy, things in Ukraine are rapidly spinning further out of control. It's been out of control for some time, but Russian President Vladimir Putin does not see any resistance from the United States. The United States government has put sanctions in place on a number of Russian officials, but not on Putin himself, not on major Russian corporations, KGB Oil and Limited, you know, the oil and gas, Gazprom and Rosneft, the major oil and gas companies that are run by Putin cronies, former KGB cronies. And so Putin thinks he can get away with anything he wants to do. He's got his thugs in eastern Ukraine. They are battling the Ukrainian army, such as it is, and they seem to have the upper hand. And that's what's really troubling. The Russians have tens of thousands of troops stationed just on the borders of Ukraine. They have an unknown number of agents provocateurs inside Ukraine posing as Ukrainian separatists. And they seem to be bent on breaking that country apart, splitting Ukraine into at least two different halves. One, a Russian-occupied province like Crimea, and the other, a Ukrainian independent rump state. This is where we're headed. It could go to open conflict. The Russians seem to know of no deterrent because the United States has been weak and we have not stood up to them, and Putin sees that. A vacuum of power is an invitation to dictators.
Ken Timmerman, he's on top of the geopolitical stories happening across our world. We're so grateful to be able to have him behind these microphones as one of our broadcast partners. Ken, thank you so very much, my good friend. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Jimmy. And God bless. Enjoy these Independence Day celebrations in Israel.